so good to be back. I feel like I haven't been here for months for some reason. It's good to be back. We've just heard this parable. What is it about? How can we summarize that, and what would it look like? We've been talking about the coming of the Lord, and we talked about the readiness for His coming, and we continue to talk about that because that's what it's all about. But what would you call that parable? Well, first, it looked to me like a parable about an investor. And the moment I thought about that, I thought, you know, I cannot relate to that. I am not an investor. I never been an investor in my life. Let me ask you, would you relate to that parable if we would call that an investor? How many of you have invested in your life or participated in that process of investing money into something? You don't have to raise hands if you don't want to, but if you at least nod your head. The point is, can we relate to investing? Well, let's take a look. Let's try if it fits, if it's about an investor. There is a master who apparently is a very rich person. And we don't know much about him except we know that he is living and has three servants. And what he does, he calls them up and he says, here's your part of my money. It's five to you, two talents to you, and one talent to you. And the thing is, he doesn't explain what he wants them to do with the talents. And I think there is a reason for that. Hopefully we'll see that. Well, they got the money. If he is an investor, let's just try that. He wants his money to increase, right? That's what investors are all about. They want to increase. They want to get profit back. And it kind of goes well. We see one gets it, and he goes and invests in his turn, right? It works. And another one gets it too. Well, he goes and he invests too. And when it comes to the third one, it's a little problem. He doesn't invest for some reasons. Well, let's spend a little time trying to figure out why he didn't invest. We are continuing to try that investment idea. When the master comes back, calls him up, and one brings 10 instead of 5. It was 100% increase. Another one comes, gives 2 more. Fine. Then the third one comes and gives him back what he had received. And so it makes sense what the master does next if he is the investor. He thinks and he concludes that it's not a good investment in this guy. Therefore, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take what I gave to him and I'm going to invest in a good guy who makes money. It makes perfect sense if he is the investor. And therefore, it makes sense when at the end we read that for everyone who has, more will be given. And he will have abundance. Well, let's put that little phrase aside. But let's focus our attention on the first part. For to everyone who has, more will be given. It makes sense if he is an investor. He gives to the one who can make more. It's logical. Now, I missed something purposely. Because when I studied and looked into the scripture, I came to the conclusion that it doesn't make sense. It's not about an investor. Well, let's do the math together and see if that's the right conclusion. How many talents, and by the way, it's a very important point. Do you know how much one talent is worth? Well, according to my Bible, which is Andrew's study Bible, and the notes down there, of course I checked other commentaries, and they came out to roughly the same idea. And I'm reading from here. A talent was about 6,000 days' wages. Can you imagine that? One talent. It's about 6,000 days' wages. That's a lot of money. Can you imagine? And I calculated, I think roughly it's about 20 years worth of money. 20 years. That's a lot of money. It's almost retirement fund. So he gives, let's do the math, okay? If he is the investor, how many talents did he invest? Well, he gave 5 to one, that's 5. He gave 2 to another one, that's 7. He gave 1 to the third one, that's 8, right? So he had 8, That's a huge sum of money. If you calculate it in terms of days and wages, it's about 133 plus years worth of wages. That's a lot of money. And so he had eight. Now, in the middle of the parable, how much money did he make? The first one that got five brought another five. That's 10. Okay? The second one had two, brought another two. That's four. 10 plus four is 14. The third one didn't make any profit, but yet he brought back his talent. That's one talent. So 14 plus one is 15. Well, that's not bad. He had eight. He got back 15. That's not bad. Now, what happens next? That little verse threw me away. Verse 28. So take the talent from the one who didn't make any money and give it to him who has 10 talents. Wait a minute. We just thought and read that they gave their talents back to the master. Isn't that true? How come we read, take from him and give to him who has 10 talents? Apparently, at this point, at the end of the parable, we see, we don't know why, we cannot explain now, but at least in terms of the literal words and numbers, we see that now the first servant has 10 talents. We can speculate, we can say, well, maybe the master gave him back the 10 talents. We don't know, but the point is that he has 10 talents. And so the master orders the third one, give it to him who has 10 already. And so he ends up having 11. Now, if we said that the master made total was 15, and at the end of the parable, out of that 15, who has 11? The first servant. How many talents does the master have at the end of the parable? Well, 15 minus 11 is 4. Now, how many talents did he have in the beginning? 8. So he had 8, according to the parable. I'm just being very literal what we read there. He had 8. By the end of the parable, how many does he have? 4. Is this a good investment or what? Now, is it about an investor then? Well, I'd like to suggest it's about the giver, not the investor. Let me just read a few very, very important quotes that I found. I'm reading from Christ's Object Lessons, page 326. All men have been bought with this infinite price. And let's just pay attention to the next phrase. By pouring the whole treasury of heaven into this world, by giving us in Christ all heaven, God has purchased the will, the affections, the mind, the soul of every human being. Whether believers or unbelievers, all men are the Lord's property. All are called to do service for Him. And for the manner in which they have met this claim, all will be required to render an account at the great judgment day. What kind of master do we see here who is pouring out all his treasury? It's not just a little here, like we like to say, you put your eggs in different baskets. That's the right way to invest. He is pouring out all the treasury in this one basket. He is the giver. And the point is that that master in the parable, he owned the slaves. They were his own. Likewise, Jesus bought all of us. He owns us. He has a right for each one of us. And he gives in order to have us. So it's about the giver. It's not about the investor in a way. And I hope you understand the difference that I'm making here. I'm just playing with words in some ways. But it's not about making profits. It's about giving. Because at the end, besides four talents that he ended up with, he had two servants on his side. Don't forget that too. How can we apply it to us? What is it all about? Where are we in this picture? Besides what we've just read, that we are bought, God has invested in us, we are his slaves, what else can we see in this parable? I'd like to turn our attention to that third servant, because in contrast, we can learn so much from him. Let's just read a little bit again about him. I'm going to start reading verse 18, and then we're going to read verse 24. Verse 18. But he who had received one went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. And according to Mishnah, which is Hebrew's way of interpreting scriptures, the comments to the scripture, according to Mishnah, to put money in the ground is the safest way to protect them. So he uses his own security to protect whatever he has by putting that in the ground. So he does that. And while we are reading, think about his mindset. What do we see there? What is he thinking about? What is his attitude? Then verse 24, actually when the master came back and the first and the second gave him the profit, we read, then he who had received the one talent came and said, Lord, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you have not sown, and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid, and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours. Two words that I'd like us to think about. I knew you, and I was afraid. And they are connected. What did he know about the master? Was it a true picture that he had about the master or not? Well, he thought about him as an investor. I was just imagining if somebody would come to me, an investor, and would say to me, look, here's 50, I'm just picking a number. Here is $50 million. There you have it, my money. Well, I know he's an investor. How would you feel? How would I feel? Here's $50 million in my hand. You know, it's kind of scary. I don't know what he would do. I don't know what kind of money he expects from me. I don't know what kind of person he is. In fact, I started thinking, how do brokers feel when they deal with somebody's money? I have no idea. I haven't been there. But it's a lot of stress. It's a lot of risk. It's a lot of fear. So if it's between the investor, the guy who invests his money, we can understand his behavior. He saw this investment and he had his reasons. The next step, he protects himself and the money. What kind of mentality is that? Is it close to the picture of the master who gives, who pours out all the treasury in heaven, who invests, who takes a huge risk? Is it even close to this picture? I don't think so. That's so far from this picture of the master that we can see. Christ being that master. By any chance, can you identify with this guy who has some knowledge of God and has a lot of fears? You don't have to answer. This is a very important, very deep question to me personally, to all of us. Is fear a part of your religion? Is fear motivate what you do or don't do? That's a very serious question. And in fact, there's a paradox here. According to even the master's response at the end, he says, well, okay, if you were fearful, kind of makes sense. If you are fearful, you should do more, right? You should have invested. You should have acted. That's our human logic. We think, well, if we will press harder, if somebody will scare us enough, we'll do it. That's how we think. That's how our human sinful logic works. But the fact is that fear paralyzes everybody. Yeah, well, we can act for some time. We can do something. If someone wants us to, we can pretend. We're going to keep doing that until somebody stops watching us. I mean, if nobody sees us, we're not going to continue to do things. It's not going to work. It's a very serious problem that God save us from this. To do things for God because of fear. What kind of master do you know? Who is he? And it's interesting when you study this passage,
And you look for words that are used in other passages. There's another story that is closely connected in terms of the terminology and words. And we've talked about this briefly last time. It was one of those parables of the kingdom of heaven. Maybe you can help me out now. What parable out of those parables of the kingdom of heaven is connected in some ways in terminology to this one? And the word talent, to settle an account, was about the master who forgave the servant. And listen to this. He forgave 10,000 talents. Now, can you imagine that? We're talking about one talent being 6,000 days' wages. And in that parable, talent is used. There was a guy who owed huge 10,000 talents. Can you even calculate that number? And what kind of master was he? He was able to forgive that kind of money. 10,000 talents. When it comes to the picture of the master, that's who he is. That's the same master. That's the same master who was able to forgive 10,000 talents. Now, let's imagine this guy that got one talent. He thought, oh man, now let me try at least to do something with it. Maybe he heard about others who invested. Let me try. And let's say he invests this one talent and he gets back one-tenth of a profit. Don't you think the master would be happy with that? At least, let me play safe. At least, don't you think that the master would be able to forgive him? Of course. Can you imagine one talent? What is it compared to 10,000 talents? And the master was able to forgive that. So that's who the master is. And the problem of this guy is that he had no clue about how good of a master he had. And he went according to his own understanding. And the thing is that the master didn't change that at the end. It was too late. It was too late to say, okay, look, you want to know who I am? This is who I am. And the master went on explaining and describing how good he is. It was too late. And so that one guy ended up with what he had in his mind about his master. And he disappeared, perished with that knowledge. So the point is, and that's the connection with what we've talked about last time, it's not wise to wait for Jesus' second coming to get to know him. It's going to be too late. Let's get to know him personally today. Let's have the right picture of God today, because that determines how we act. Yes, we can talk about this parable and we can emphasize the action. In fact, that's true. This parable calls us to action, to developing all the talents. And we can give a list, or at least if you read this Christ's Object Lesson, chapter 25, you can find things when it comes to talents. These are spiritual gifts, natural talents, mental faculties, speech, influence, time, health, strength, money, kindly impulses and affections. All those Ellen White calls talents. So all of those things that God has given to all of us in different ways, in different combinations, but he has given all of us. And we can talk about, you know, let's do it. Let's work and let's just develop them. And that would be the right thing to say. But I wanted to look at a little deeper. How does it work? It's not enough to say, let's just use them. And do you think we'll get up and go and use them right away? Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. This parable points out to the motivation. What helps us to use those talents, or what keeps us from using them. And that is, what kind of God do we know? Do you know him? And this is the most important question to ask. So I invite you not only to think about what God has given you and me, which is a wise thing to do too. In fact, if one talent is worth so much money, then every little gift from God is priceless. It's priceless. Don't ever think, I don't have much. Even the least that God gives, one talent, is worth 20 years to work, according to this parable. It's a lot of money. Don't think that you don't have enough. But most importantly, when you know what God has given you, do you know Him who has given you that? Because if I know that the Master who gave me so much and He expects from me so much, He's so kind, He's so gracious, He's so merciful, He's so forgiving, He's so loving, and I can go on and on and on, and please do go on and on and on. It's worth doing that, because that knowledge breaks the chains from our hands. It takes away the fear that He's going to get us at the end. Yes, it's a serious matter. Yes, there will be questions, but it's not the picture that the one servant had about God. Because if I know that I can come to God and say, Lord, I failed. I tried my best, and that's what I could come up with. I failed. Maybe I made 1 point out of 100. Maybe not. But if I know ahead that if I don't even make it, He's going to be able to forgive me. You know what it does? It turns things around in my mind. It's a paradox. I don't know how it works, but it turns things around. Just a simple illustration. Maybe it's not going to explain everything, but just down to earth from my life as a student at the music college. I told you many things about my college. My teacher, he wanted me to work hard. He expected much from me. He wanted me to work every day for hours and to practice on my violin. That fear paralyzed me quite a bit. I did work because when he was there, he wanted me, and so I was trying too, because there was no other choice. Otherwise, I would have been thrown out. But you know what I found also? Nobody forced me to play the piano. Nobody. And I caught myself so many times sitting behind that piano and playing for hours, practicing for hours. Why? Because there was freedom. There was joy. And I accomplished something, and I enjoy doing that. And I keep doing that. And compared to how much I play on my violin, how much I play on piano, there's a big difference. I play much more on the piano than my violin. When there is freedom, and we know that nobody's going to condemn us, or nobody's going to put a gun to our head and say, oh, we got you. We do things. And that's who God is. And in fact, if you noticed the reward, He invited the two servants to share His joy. If He is a giver, it brings Him joy to give, right? And so those two, they got it. And they were able to share that joy with the king. And they were invited. And the guy who didn't do it, he wouldn't get it if he would have been invited there too. Because he had no joy. He didn't know what it means to give. Because of love and joy, not because of pressure. Would you like to share God's joy? Ellen White goes on and writes, I recommend reread. I'm assuming that most of us or all of us have read that chapter. That's a beautiful chapter to read, chapter 25 out of Christ's Object Lessons. It's a rich, rich reading. But she also mentions there that in heaven, we're not going to be able to enjoy what God offers there if we are not used to giving here. Out of love, not out of pressure, we're not going to be able to enjoy heaven. And in fact, she even makes the stronger statement, who we are today is a reflection of what we will be in heaven. That's a scary thought. That's a very scary thought. We think about heaven as something, oh, it's somewhere over there, it's so far, and we have no idea. Yes, we don't have a clue, and the Bible is true about that. But in a way, we do, because it's about Christ who kept giving. And He wants us to get it and to give and to experience that joy of developing, of giving, investing, pouring all the treasure into His kingdom. So I invite all of us, myself, when we think about our readiness for His coming, it's about action. It's about using the gifts that God has given us, developing them, improving them. In fact, again, the same chapter there points out that we should set such a high mark we think about ourselves, oh, you know, we can do this much. No, let's set a mark over there because God sees the potential in us. And let's work, let's improve that. But not because we fear somebody, but because we know that He keeps giving and giving, and He pours everything in us. Would you like to be in that kingdom and to share His joy? Let's do it today. Let's keep knowing Him. I invite you to pray with me. Oh, Heavenly Father, when we think about the three servants, when we're really honest with ourselves, I cannot speak for all here, but I can speak for myself that probably I am the third one. Lord, I fail quite often. I don't do what I should quite often. And Lord, there is nothing to be proud of. But just the glimpse of your character, just the little picture that we have, that we receive today of you as a master who was able to forgive 10,000 times of what that servant was given. Lord, I pray that the true knowledge of you, who you are, will transform us. And as a result of that, we'll be active. We'll be developing all the gifts that you've given us. We'll be investing them. We'll be pouring all the treasures that we have for your kingdom.